Winter is often the time of year when we find out how tough our motor vehicles are. Get out there in a freezing cold morning and see if you get a vroom or a jug, jug, jug. Our monthly segment with Zachary Edwards from Ashland Automotive is called The Squeaky Wheel. And this month we'll focus on starters and batteries and charging systems, all the things that can go wrong with the electrical workings of your cars. I'll invite you again to join the conversation. 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Zach, good to see you back.
Hey, good to see you, Jeff.
So let's start with some basic things. I mean, a car's electrical system is interesting to me because it's not quite like your house wiring system.
Yeah, it's direct current versus alternating current, and that's a complex issue. But yeah, the cars, they just operate on a 12-volt system. At least cars of the past have operated on a 12-volt system. And they utilize a battery, which is really only used to power the starter. So the starter then has a plunger. When you turn the key, the plunger pops out of the starter and cranks the engine round and round. Once the engine starts, it's like a turtle's head goes back into the shell on the starter, and the starter is done. The battery is done doing real work. At that point, the battery is just a storage device for extra electrical energy generated by the alternator.
So the battery just has one job from the sounds of it. It's just got to be there long enough to get your internal combustion engine, if you've got one, started.
Yep, and then to store energy that can be used, you know, at a later date. So, the alternator is generally supplying all of the electrical energy requirements for the car. And if there's any excess, it's going to go into the battery and kind of refill the battery. Think of the battery like a cup of water. Take a drink of that water, and that water glass needs to be filled back up before the next start, in theory. But batteries are so well constructed nowadays, they can start a car multiple times without getting refilled or recharged, but eventually they're going to need to be filled back up.
Which raises a question I have about batteries, because it seems like years ago batteries lasted less time and needed maintenance. I mean, you actually had to add water to them once in a while, or electrolyte. What changed?
The interior construction of the batteries has improved tremendously, and there's lots of different types of innards. You have gel cells, and you have the conventional lead-acid batteries still. But I think the quality of the electrolyte has improved so much that batteries now are maintenance-free, so you don't really pop the lid off of the battery and fill them back up with electrolyte anymore. They don't like you to do that. A lot of battery manufacturers don't even allow for any access to the inside of the battery.
Yeah, everything seems to be pretty well wrapped up tight on a lot of the modern maintenance-free batteries.
Yep.
Is it still surprising to you, though? I mean, given how far cars have come in so many other ways, and we've had discussions near where you tell me about drive-by-wire systems where you're not even really steering the car. You're telling a computer how to steer it. But we still use lead-acid batteries. I mean, you got these chunks of lead plates in there, which is what makes batteries so heavy, and sulfuric acid in there.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a little surprising that we're still using that technology?
I'm not really surprised. It works. It works really well, and the cost is a factor. And like I said, the batteries, it's more the alternators that have changed quite a bit over time, and the alternators are the belt driven. So as the engine starts and begins to turn, and eventually it's turning itself, running off of gasoline or diesel, then they just hook a belt. The engineers provide for a belt to drive a spinning pulley on an alternator, and that creates, it's like the power plant for the engine. And so alternators have changed quite a bit as the electrical demands of the engine have increased. So electric power steering, for instance, is a newer development on cars. And so that conventional power steering was belt driven, and it was a drag on the engine. And now the power steering in lots of cars is electric. It's controlled by a computer, which looks at various inputs from sensors, including a steering wheel angle sensor. And then the pump is electrically powered. And so there's still a load on the engine indirectly through the alternator, but it's not a direct load through the power steering pump.
Oh, interesting. So it does have an electrical requirement. There's still a motor involved there, but it's not yanking directly off the engine itself through a pulley.
Yep, it's less.
And a belt.
And also a big change in alternators has been that they're computer controlled. And so an alternator, if the engine or the load of the vehicle is less, then the alternator charges less. If the load is high, then the alternator can recognize that load and charge more. And so really you're not providing power where it's not needed. You're not dragging down the engine when it's not needed. So it's a pretty good, you know, these are all things created to increase fuel economy and try and, you know, these manufacturers are always having to meet government regulations and
poor fuel economy standards, the CAFE standards.
Zach
Edwards is our guest once again on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the proprietor at Ashland Automotive and the co-host of our segment, The Squeaky Wheel. We're talking about things that go wrong with cars, and this month we're talking about electrical systems. Is there something that's happened to your car lately? Or you have corrosion in your battery terminals or some of the other things that happen with electrical systems in vehicles? Let's hear it. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone. You can send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. I'm glad you talked about alternators because I was going to ask about when we stopped calling them generators. It seems like it's been a generation ago. Not to be too glib here, but I mean, at one time those were called generators, and they became called alternators.
Yeah, so generators created direct current, and alternators create alternating current, which is more like found in your home. And alternators, then that current needs to be converted to DC, and so there was a couple of generators that came back onto the scene, if I recall. But for the most part, generators kind of went away in the early 80s, the late 70s.
All right. So we went from, so it's still a DC system primarily and has to be converted back DC, but the AC is just more, what, it's more efficient or something?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about some of the basic things about the electrical system and the boogeymen that can attack it. If the car won't start, for example, what are the things to look for and to listen for?
Well, I guess a lot of people were to start with the total basics here, but you know, when you stick your key in the ignition, turn it all the way to the spring loaded position, that's in the cranking position. And so what you're hearing is kind of like a roo 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 roo. That's the engine turning around, and the starter is what's doing that. So if you get to that point and your car won't start, you know at least your starter and your battery are working, because the battery is what powers the starter, and the starter is what spins the engine. So if you hear the spinning sound of the engine, that typical revolutionary, then you know your starter and battery are working, and there's another problem that's not causing it. So the starting and charging system, generally, if you have a problem with them, you're not going to get to that cranking sound. So there's some other sounds that rapid click sound is a really common, like a...
It happened to me the other day.
Click, 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 that sound. So that is generally, that's the plunger in your starter, which doesn't have enough energy behind it to actually force it out of its case and into the flywheel of the engine. And so what you're hearing is that plunger trying to engage the engine, but it doesn't have enough electrical force behind it, which is voltage, to achieve its function.
So not enough of the battery is getting there. What would cause that interruption in electricity?
Most commonly, it's a bad connection at the battery. And, you know, I can't tell you how many times we've seen bizarre problems with cars, just completely bizarre problems with cars, where they were fixed by cleaning the battery. And even though the battery looked clean, the connections looked clean, there was no corrosion, but just by taking the cable clamps off, inspecting all of those connections down there, and then the actual connection to the battery, by cleaning all of that and addressing it, fixes problems. And the car is so dependent on electricity nowadays that all of those connections have to be very, very clean and tight. And, you know, there's a lot of places out there that do free battery installations. And you really get what you pay for when you get a free battery installation. We've seen several customers' cars come in with a new battery that's just full of acid and corrosion because whoever installed it, they just don't address the corrosion issues. They just put the battery in, put the clamps back on there. And then, of course, your alternator is trying to charge the battery through those connections. And if you want to think of it like trying to squeeze water, it's great to compare electricity to water because everyone can relate. So
it flows.
Yeah, it flows. And so if you think of trying to push water through a pipe and the inside of the pipe is so corroded that the diameter is reduced by 75%, you're not going to put a lot of water through that pipe. It's the same with your alternator trying to charge your battery through a bad connection. And of course, what that does is it causes your alternator to have to work extra hard because it's pumping really hard to get the water through the pipe. And then your alternator fails prematurely. And so it's a chain reaction. And one simple, you know, mistake of not installing your battery correctly can
cost
you. And not
keeping the terminals clean.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and it's not only clean terminals, but it's tight terminals, mm-hmm. properly seated terminals, properly connected wires. It's not that difficult, but for someone who doesn't do it every day, little things can really get you. So,
all right, let's take a call here. We have Elna and Ashland on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Zach Edwards. We're talking about the squeaky wheel.
Yes, my husband's light had been coming on, warning light on the battery, and he finally had it checked at a battery place, and they told him that the alternator was providing too much electricity and boiling all the water out of the battery, and the battery was likely to explode. So he had the battery changed out for one that he could add water to, but I'm thinking that's not a safe stopgap measure.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. That is not a good idea. And whoever told you that was, they knew what they were talking about. It's not uncommon for alternators to fail the other way, which instead of not charging enough, they overcharge. They're internally regulated, and so uh-huh. that regulator can fail, and then the alternator doesn't know when to stop. And that can cause problems. And one of the problems is, you know, things melt and can catch on fire, actually. So alternators can catch on fire. Wiring can catch on fire. You can see how if you have a combination of a fuel leak with an overcharging alternator, how the result could be really bad, or, an oil leak, even in the wrong spot.
So can an alternator in that position be fixed, or is it more likely you're just going to swap it out for another one?
It's just going to be swapped out. I mean, there are places that still rebuild alternators, and we, at our shop, we utilize those services occasionally. But generally, that's for a real specialty application. It's tough. There's such good supplies of remanufactured alternators from original equipment manufacturers now. So we use Nippon Denso for a lot of our alternators. They were the Japanese company that supplied alternators for Toyota and Honda, a lot of Chrysler products, a lot of different cars, whether they're Asian manufactured or not, use this Japanese company. And they're so plentiful now. That and the warranty is so good that it's just, you know, in terms of for the customer, it's just a better thing for the customer to get a remanufactured one that's not really with, you know, I don't want to discredit anybody out there who's rebuilding alternators because I think that's a great specialty niche, but it's just hard to provide rapid turnaround for customers because when they're without their car, it's hard on them.
Yeah,
so
you've got to find other ways to do things.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, the alternator, they can overcharge and they can cause major problems. And so that alternator needs to be replaced.
All right. Thanks for the call, Elna. Appreciate that. We'll take additional calls here on the Jefferson Exchange. Talk about the electrical system in your car or truck and questions you might have about how that works. Zach Edwards is the proprietor of Ashland Automotive and our co-host on the Squeaky Wheel once a month. Join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. John Baxter, the producer in our newsroom, just handed me a note about conditions deteriorating, actually, on Interstate 5 north of Grants Pass. So over the passes between Grants Pass and Roseburg, chains are now required on all vehicles except 4x4s. So not good conditions from Grants Pass all the way north to Canyonville. Southbound traffic is being held at Glendale. So numerous spinouts and stalls on the mountains because of the low elevation snow today. So something to think about and conditions to check on before you go anywhere today. Let's come back to talk about the car stuff because the green gook, the corrosion that builds up on terminals, somebody told me once that's really like crystallizing exhaust from the battery, like the sulfuric acid is collecting into crystals or something.
Yeah, if I remember right, that's a sulfuric acid escaping from the inside of the battery, and a real common area it can escape is right where the posts screw in to the top of the battery. Those battery posts actually are just, they have a threaded stud on the bottom of them, and they spin right into the battery. And so that's an area where leakage can occur. So,
and it's more that it look. It's not just that it looks icky or something, but I mean, as you pointed out, it can cause some issues with the transmission of electricity and work, make your alternator work harder. I've also noticed, unfortunately, by personal experience, that if you let it go too long, it can start crawling up the cable, and you'll need to get that replaced as well.
Exactly. Yeah, the cable inside the big battery cable, you have multiple strands of copper wire, and they're woven together. And as the corrosion builds, it's going to keep creeping along conductive surfaces. And so not only can it creep up your battery cable and ruin that, which for the listener who just called in, that cable needs to be questioned at this point too, because it could have been compromised from the overcharging alternator. So that if that problem continues, you know, the costs are just going to add and add and add. But back to the corrosion, it can also destroy, you know, the engine compartment. So a lot of times there's a special tray where the battery sits, and it's kind of a flat platform that's, you know, built into the frame or the front clip of the car. And that platform just gets corroded and eaten away, and it's like rust. It just eats metal. And so that corrosion needs to be addressed right away, ideally, you know, taken care of right away.
So other things that can happen with the electrical system, and particularly when starting is concerned, does it sometimes happen the other way where it's not a matter of the plunger not making connection with the starter and cranking the engine, but it actually gets stuck in that position? I think I've had that happen.
Yep, starters. So now we're talking about starters and how they fail, and starters can fail in a variety of ways. Sometimes they just, you know, there's brushes inside there, more or less.
Electrical brushes?
Yeah, there's a plunger, and then there's some contacts on that plunger. And if those fail or they get corroded, then the plunger won't pop out at all. Or occasionally there's a spring which returns the plunger into the case of the starter. So when you're energizing that starter, you're overcoming the spring pressure, and the plunger is able to push against the spring and pop out. And as soon as you take away that electrical force that you've applied to it, the spring pops it back in. So if that spring were to break, then your starter becomes stuck in a spinning engine, which is spinning, you know, at idle 1,000 revolutions per minute. And, you know, that's generally doesn't end well for the starter. The starter is already broken at that point, but it can cause, you know, more problems.
Sure. It damaged the car. Of these parts, I mean, batteries obviously generally cost under $100. Alternators, I know, cost a few hundred, and I imagine starters are a little more than that.
Yeah, I mean, new alternators for some European cars can be $700, $800 just for the part. So starters generally don't get to be that expensive for the part. Now, sometimes starters are located in a place that's very hard to get to. There's some Toyota applications out there, like the Toyota V8s, where the starters actually way down in the top of the engine block in between the two banks of cylinders. So we call that like the crotch of the V. And it's just very difficult to get to, and probably 4 or 5 hours of professional labor to be able to take that apart. And then you have to replace a bunch of gaskets on your way back in. And so, again, back to that question about getting starters and alternators rebuilt versus buying them professionally rebuilt from a manufacturing facility. When you're talking about that much labor, as a shop, what we're really looking for is, you know, if that new part fails, who's going to reimburse us to do the job twice, because we don't charge the customer twice? So, you know, these are things that as a business owner, you have to consider. What's our best warranty in-house from a supply company? And we've talked about it before, but getting parts nowadays is getting more and more difficult as manufacturing standards vary around the world, and labor becomes hard to find in some cases, or quality labor, I should say. And so it's a tough call.
If your car is not starting, something's wrong with the electrical system, perhaps your battery's a little dead, what do you recommend in terms of, let's talk about jump starts before we talk about pop starts on standard transmissions. I mean, are there some circumstances in which you don't recommend jump starting a car?
I don't ever jump start anybody else's car. It's never recommended to jump start a car anymore. The modern electrical system, it's really hard on your car. If you're the car doing the jumping, it can be really difficult.
The one delivering electricity.
Yeah. Yep. So what I carry in my car is a portable jump-starting device, which is really fascinating. It's basically a massive capacitor. I charge it up. It lasts for many, many months. And this this is probably the size of a hardback book, mm-hmm. except maybe I'm looking at your hardback book here.
You need a thicker one than that. But
well, no, it's mm-hmm. not. It's only maybe an inch tall
really?
And 3 inches wide by 8 inches long. And this little capacitor can jumpstart a car 35 times without being recharged and can jumpstart a diesel engine 10 times.
Wow.
And so they make really affordable versions, $70 for mm-hmm. the consumer maybe. Be really
but
good idea.
But you do not recommend jumping car to car.
No, it's mm-hmm. that's just what we were always taught in back in school, you know, and that was 17 years ago when modern vehicles and electrical loads were really starting to come onto the scene with all these electrical devices and people, you know, charge ports being able to handle, laptops being plugged in. They're not cigarette lighters anymore. So,
all right. They've got a lot of things. Well, a lot of things going on in the electrical system in the car, and I'm glad we got a chance to peruse some of it today. And thanks for your call, Elna. Appreciate it. Zach Edwards is the proprietor of Ashland Automotive and our monthly guest for the segment we call The Squeaky Wheel. Always good to see you, Zach.
Hey, you too. Thanks, Jeff.
You bet.